WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. A busy Wednesday for President-elect Trump, naming his choices for multiple high-ranking posts in his administration.
For Secretary of State, Trump tapping his one-time presidential primary opponent, Republican Senator Marco Rubio. Trump's pick for Attorney General, Republican Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz. Former Democratic Congresswoman turned Trump supporter Tulsi Gabbard has been chosen for Director of National Intelligence.
ABC's Dave Packer. Conspiracy theory purveying website InfoWars and most of its assets went on the auction block Wednesday. It's a private auction to settle $1.5 billion judgment against founder Alex Jones for insisting for years the Newtown, Connecticut school massacre was a hoax. Greg Popovich, 75-year-old head coach of the NBA's San Antonio Spurs, hasn't been with the team early this season. The team announcing Wednesday he suffered a mild stroke earlier this month, is already in rehab and expected to make a full recovery. This is ABC News. Continued U.S. support for Ukraine in question as President-elect Trump prepares to take power. Outgoing Secretary of State Antony Blinken addressed NATO allies in Brussels.
We have 50 countries that have been acting in support of Ukraine. And I'm convinced from the conversations we have today and the conversations we have virtually every day that that support will continue.
Until the president-elect is sworn in.
Making sure that every dollar we have at our disposal will be pushed out the door between now and January 20th.
In February of 2000, Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute scientists spotted a mysterious, gelatinous, bioluminescent creature swimming almost 8,600 feet down in the Pacific Ocean. Initially, they couldn't classify it, just called it a mystery mollusk. More than two decades later, though, the researchers announced it's a new species of sea slug. The findings published in the journal Deep Sea Research, Part 1. I'm Richard Cantu, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Matt Nair on air.
And we are here with Matt Randolph, Mr. Global. Donald Trump now will be coming in for a second term. There has been talk of removing sanctions from Russia. What would that mean, Matt, for the oil and gas industry?
So it depends on what Russia does, but we've seen nothing to suggest that they want to have anything to do with lowering oil prices.
And so the prices are essentially going to stay the same?
In all likelihood, yes.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Packers back on the clock. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers back from their bye week, getting ready to play the Bears in Chicago at noon Sunday. I asked the Packers' leading receiver, Jaden Reed, how's he feeling week 11 with at least eight more games to go?
I feel really good right now. I felt pretty good last game, too, but before that, I was pretty beat up. So, you know, that's why we had a bye week. And, you know, hopefully everybody's feeling much better so we can go out there and fly around and play the best ball we can play.
The Badgers host the number one ranked team in the nation, Oregon, when they play at Camp Randall Saturday night at 6:30. NBA, the Bucks host the Pistons tonight in Milwaukee. The Bucks with a 99-85 win over the Raptors.
What Giannis did today was he really played. One of the things we harp about is playing quick decision basketball. You know, it went from side to side, it moved and went back down, swung back in the paint and made threes. And Giannis was a shepherd of that a lot. Ball didn't stick a lot.
That's head coach Doc Rivers with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Beyonce might have been disappointed with her response from the Country Music Awards, but when it comes to Grammy nominations, she's at the top. Variety reports that Beyonce has been nominated for 11 Grammys, including Artist, Song, and Album of the Year for Cowboy Carter. Not far behind are some other heavy hitters, including, you guessed it, Taylor Swift, Sabrina Carpenter, Billie Eilish, and new kid on the block, Chappell Roan. Roan and Carpenter also up for Best New Artist of the Year. Looks like I got shut out again. Taylor Sheridan apparently decided he does not have enough shows on TV, so he is teaming up with Blake Shelton for a new music reality show. The Road will follow a big-time music star around the country in search of the next big musical talent. Deadline reports competing artists will have the opportunity to open for an A-lister in various towns to win over crowds. The music superstar who will lead the search has not yet been revealed. The Road will launch in the fall of 2025 on CBS. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A shower or two around tonight with a mostly cloudy sky and lows in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, highs to the upper 40s. We turn to around 50 degrees for Friday and the weekend, slight rain chance Saturday night. Currently, it's 44 degrees.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media's own Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, joins us at 11:06. All things sports with J.R. Ratcliffe and This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, hit me, cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. A Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chuzhunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations.
Hey, we're grateful for our partnership with the City of Minneapolis, and home to one of the largest urban American Indian populations here on Turtle Island. And we have our guest host, Christine McDonald, and has another great, great lineup here this month. And I want to pass things over to our host for today, Christine McDonald. Welcome.
Thank you, Robert. Bonjour, Ogadaki, Gabawik, Nindishnika, Sajijak, Nindindem. I am Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and I'm your host today for American Indian Relations on Native Roots Radio. Our first guest today is Inspector Jose Gomez with the Minneapolis Police Department. Inspector, can you tell our audience a little bit about you and what you do for the Minneapolis Police Department?
Good afternoon. Yes, thank you for having me, Christine. Bonjour, everybody. Yeah, it's an honor and privilege to be the third precinct inspector. That's my current title. And you know, just a little bit of, about myself. I grew up in a small town in Nebraska. My parents are originally from Mexico. I was brought over when my mother was pregnant with me, born stateside. We went back to Mexico. I grew up there for a number of years as a child, came back here. You know, and I kind of started looking into law enforcement as a kid. I know my parents were afraid of law enforcement just from their background and, you know, just knowing police like they knew back in their country. And then being here undocumented, there was always that fear of deportation. And I just remember always hiding, you know, like even if the mailman came to the front door, we would all hide in the basement because they didn't know any better. You know, and, you know, I grew up partly in this culture in America, and I knew that they couldn't do that. So I kind of wanted to, you know, do something to help others. And I saw law enforcement as a way of kind of helping out my community and being somebody that can help, you know, Latino community, but all communities. And, my first job was in Minneapolis, and to be honest, I had intentions of going back home because I wanted to be close to family, but I I ended up falling in love with the city. I bought a house in South Minneapolis. And one of the things that really kept me, I'm a lot on Franklin, but Lake Street started booming with the Latino population back in the mid to late 90s. Mercado Central became like an incubator business for Latino families. And it just really kind of, it seems like it changed overnight, but it didn't. And it was just, I just kind of fell in love with the area. And, 30 years later, I'm still here. And, I'm glad I am. I know May of 2020 was difficult for all of us after the murder of Floyd. There was a lot of hate, just everywhere. And I for the first time in my career, it was hard coming into work because it was just a different time. But I didn't want to leave that way. And I'm glad I decided to stay. And I kind of wanted to leave this place a little bit better. I mean, we'll never be perfect. I'm not perfect, but I just, I think there's work that can still be done, to kind of mend relationships, work with community, just try to recruit and rebuild, this department. So, yeah.
What are some of the major initiatives that your team is working on these days?
Before I kind of talk about that too, I don't know if everybody's familiar with like the third precinct. So that's kind of the area that we're talking about. So for the city of Minneapolis, the police department has five precincts. I oversee the third precinct, which is South Minneapolis. It's basically crosstown to 94 on the north. And then the east and west borders are the river and 35W. It is the largest geographically precinct. It's 16 square miles. The whole city is, I think, roughly 56 square miles. And it's the largest population-wise. There's over 125,000 residents. And I tell people it's actually like the third largest city in the state. So you got like Minneapolis, St. Paul. If you take third precinct, it's bigger than Rochester. It's bigger than Duluth. In my opinion, I think it's the most diverse also, just with different cultures, backgrounds, ethnicities. It's just so, even now we're having a lot of recent arrivals from Ecuador, Venezuela, and a lot of them are calling third precinct home, South Minneapolis. It's just always kind of been a hub for communities that are coming here. So for the third precinct summit, at the precinct level, the main responsibility is 911. We respond to 911 calls. And we have two investigators that are sworn that work on property crimes. Property crimes are anything from, damage to auto theft, burglary, kind of offenses that are like that. And then there's one civilian investigator that assists them with those cases. So, and then also we have four crime prevention specialists, which they are divided into different sectors. The precinct has four sectors. It's 10, 20, and 30 and 40 sector. They're responsible for their area. They work with block clubs. They work with, neighborhoods, businesses, do security assessments. If there's, issues that are going on, with a building, it might be a nuisance property. They work with other departments in the city, whether it's like reg services, CPED, licensing, to try to figure out, how to mitigate that and work on it. One of the things that we do at the precinct level too is, I know sometimes I get some questions about, it's frustrating. We get frustrated also where people will tell me, do you guys even plan? Like, is there a plan? Like when you guys show up to work, is there a plan? Do you just go out there and patrol? Like it just seems, what are you all doing? And, there is, you got to remember we lost roughly 40% of our staffing. I mean, you do that to any organization, I mean, that's a lot. So once a week at the precinct level, we hold what we call pre-MSTAT. So it stands for Minneapolis Statistics. And there's a data scientist analyst that is assigned to the precinct, and we go through all data. Basically, like, what are the trends for burglaries? What are we seeing auto thefts? Where are they? Where are, you know, our robberies? Are they going up? Are they going down? So we all sit together, and it's not just me and the data scientist. The crime prevention specialists are there. The community attorney who works for the city attorney, our embedded social worker is there. And we kind of strategize, okay, what addresses do we need, like, extra patrols in, you know, where are we seeing certain kind of crimes where maybe the CPSs can assist, in the neighborhoods. So it's very, valuable, doing that.
Hey, why don't we take a break? Why don't we take a break now? You're listening to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio and AM 950. We'll be right back.
Getting bus and train information in your language just got easier. Customers who call Metro Transit at 612-373-3333, again 612-373-3333, are able to select language options at the start of the call. To access information in Spanish, select option 2. For more information about other transit information tools, visit metrotransit.org/Spanish. That's metrotransit.org/Spanish.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
It's okay to talk about mental health. It's okay to struggle. And it's okay to ask for help. It's important that we support one another and work together to end the stigma so that we can start to tell a different story about mental health and well-being in our community. If you're looking for support for yourself or want to find resources for a loved one, visit makeitokay.org to get started. That's makeitokay.org.
Step into the world of movement and Native culture at Nimiwin, now showing at All My Relations Arts. Nimiwin is translated as Everyone Dance. This moving multimedia exhibition, curated by Josie Hoffman, delves into the connection between movement and identity, drawing inspiration from dance and powwow traditions. It showcases the work of indigenous artists from Minnesota, emphasizing the fluidity of movement in our bodies, land, and community. Witness Nimiwin and its powerful expression on indigenous art. On display now through January 18th at All My Relations Arts in Minneapolis.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald, American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis, and today our guest is Inspector Gomez with the Minneapolis Police Department, specifically in the 3rd Precinct. One of the significant reasons that I was excited to have Inspector Gomez on today is because the 3rd Precinct is actually home to the most condensed population of American Indians in the urban, in any urban area. We have the Little Earth of United Housing that's in that area, as well as other residents just tend to reside in that part of our city. And one of the things that I have been really happy with in the past few years is the relationship that has grown or improved with the 3rd Precinct, and specifically Inspector Gomez. So can you tell us, do you do any specific work with the Native community, what you're doing?
Thank you for the kind words, Christine. And yeah, you know, it was, I think it'll be 3 years next February that I have been an inspector. Time flies. But I remember, you know, when I was first asked, you know, I think I was probably more nervous than anything. I just, you know, it's just kind of a huge responsibility, and I didn't, you know, I wanted to do it right. And, you know, and you mentioned it, you know, the precinct has one of the largest indigenous populations, you know, and also as one of the MDHR reports mentioned, you know, Native Americans were disproportionately like stopped by police in the city. So, you know, there was the relationship with the community. And, but I, yeah, just kind of reflecting, I mean, we still have a lot of work to do, but like, it's the relationship, I think, is really kind of, there's something there, with some of the community. And just, and I'm so, I feel so blessed that, you know, like that I was accepted and, you know, given a chance to, you know, hopefully that they trust me to be the inspector here. And, you know, I'm very intentional. And, you know, for me, I think my relationships are authentic. Kind of what you see is what you get. I'm not just at a, I don't know, I don't attend an event or I don't meet with somebody just to check a box. I'm there because I want to listen and I want to know what's going on and I want to develop a relationship if that's something that somebody else wants to do with me. And, you know, we do a lot of, kind of volunteer work with the officers. I've gotten the officers to, you know, there's kind of two large marches that happen every year there. So there's the Native American kickoff, that happens May. And then there is the MMIW March, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives March that happens also. And for those, you know, typically you apply for the street permits, closures, it's a parade route, but, you know, officers from the third precinct, and we get assistance from Park Police, Hennepin County, and Transit. We, you know, officers volunteer to escort and block the streets, make sure everybody's safe. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed kind of going into the second year, you know, we were working with, AIM and Many Shields. So AIM, American Indian Movement, and Many Shields, it's just a local nonprofit here on Franklin. You know, but it was just kind of cool. Like they're, you know, we were all working together, blocking streets, you know, kind of leading the route. You know, and if you know anything about the American Indian Movement, I mean, they were started because of, discrimination and police brutality, a long time ago, the '70s, maybe, if I remember right. So here we are working alongside of them, and partnering with them. And I can't remember who it was, but they made a comment like they never thought they'd see the day that, you know, Minneapolis Police and AIM are working together. And that kind of stuck with me, that means a lot. And actually I, sometimes when they go out, to do those, I'll wear my movement hat when I'm out there with the parades or at events. So yeah, so it's just you know, been very intentional with those relationships. I always you know, I have office hours at the Minneapolis American Indian Center. The director has been gracious enough to allow me to use some of that space, and you know, I've developed great relationships there. A lot of meetings with Little Earth, the LIRA board, Little Earth Residents Association. You know, they're having some challenges with some crime issues. Kia Boys, everybody's kind of heard of them. You know, they've been around that area. And then another volunteer group that I have a relationship with some of the members, and we communicate quite a bit when, unfortunately, there's some incidents that happen, and that's the Little Earth Protectors. They're totally voluntary. They're out there at night, you know, doing great work. And, you know, sometimes there's things going on and we kind of need to communicate, you know, pass on information, and maybe they have something that can help us. Maybe I have something that can, you know, help them keep them safe. If I have know of anything. And then I, you know, I mentioned our pre-MSTAT a little bit ago. We, Chief O'Hara, has public MSTATs. I think it's like every other month almost. I've hosted one at the American Indian Center. That was probably in September, if I remember right. It was a great event. I had, many shields, do the drumming for the beginning. I think, Christine, I think you did the smudging. Yep. Yep. So yeah, it's, so we're slowly, we're working with these relationships. I know in the past we used to have, it was called the Police Athletic League. And that is the 501c3. Prior to May of 2020, it was a unit of, you know, I think it was four officers, but two of them were on the south side. Some listeners may remember as Officer Cheryl Goodman and Officer Colleen Zombie. They had a girls mentorship group, and they also had like volleyball, girls volleyball that they do. And I mean, that was great. I remember them with the girls planning trips. They take them to powwows. They went to like a national powwow in New Mexico one year. They'd help them with homework. And that kind of went away after, you know, I mentioned that we lost almost 40% of our staffing, but they brought back a pilot program, in North Minneapolis. And I'm hoping that at some point we can get, something going again and call it like Southside PAL, and maybe specific to Little Earth, area, South Minneapolis, and, start getting the, you know, officers so they can connect with these kids when they're younger. And, you know, it's challenging. Some of, you know, just being a kid is challenging nowadays. And just having an officer there, being active, being a good role model. Hopefully that can, that can come back to the South Side. You know, I also attend both. I attend two MUD meetings, the Public Safety MUD, which is Mary Lagarde chairs, and then the Opioid and Unsheltered MUD meeting, which I think Robert Gilligren is the chair of that one. So very active in those. I attend almost every meeting. We have great discussions, bring them updates of what's going on as far as public safety, what I'm seeing in the neighborhood, and, you know, just try to help out the community any way we can.
So can you tell us how people can stay informed about safety in their community?
Yeah, the police department, we have a very good dashboard. You can go, I guess I would, you know, if you have a Google search engine, you can just put in Minneapolis crime statistics. It'll shoot you to the site, but it's easy to navigate. It might be a little intimidating. There's a lot of information on there, but you can go by like ward, by neighborhood, filter dates, and it'll tell you, you know, what the crime stats are in your neighborhood. Like, are your burglaries going up, down? What are they from last year? What are they the last 28 day period? And we kind of use the same one. It's a little more in depth, of what we use, but the dashboard is a great place to go. Another one I would recommend is to get public safety alerts. So you could go, you'll go in your Google search engine, put Minneapolis public safety alert information, and it'll send you to the city site where you can put in your email, and you'll get anytime, you know, there's some type of incident that happens in a neighborhood, and we put out a press release, you'll get an email about it. You can choose text, email. But that's a good way of staying connected. If you want to get involved, and be like a block club leader, you could also, you know, just go on the sites and contact the local crime prevention specialist. And, it's good to know your neighbor. That's huge. Be connected, and you see something, or if we don't hear about it, it didn't happen.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu.
A busy Wednesday for President-elect Trump, naming his choices for multiple high-ranking posts in his administration.
For Secretary of State, Trump tapping his one-time presidential primary opponent, Republican Senator Marco Rubio. Trump's pick for Attorney General, Republican Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz. Former Democratic Congresswoman turned Trump supporter Tulsi Gabbard has been chosen for Director of National Intelligence.
ABC's Dave Packer. Conspiracy theory purveying website InfoWars and most of its assets went on the auction block Wednesday. It's a private auction to settle $1.5 billion judgment against founder Alex Jones for insisting for years the Newtown, Connecticut school massacre was a hoax. Greg Popovich, 75-year-old head coach of the NBA's San Antonio Spurs, hasn't been with the team early this season. The team announcing Wednesday he suffered a mild stroke earlier this month, is already in rehab and expected to make a full recovery. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Packers back on the clock. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers back from their bye week, getting ready to play the Bears in Chicago at noon Sunday. I asked the Packers' leading receiver, Jaden Reed, how's he feeling week 11 with at least 8 more games to go?
I feel really good right now. I felt pretty good last game too, but before that I was pretty beat up. So, that's why we had a bye week. And, you know, hopefully everybody's feeling much better so we can go out there and fly around and play the best ball we can play.
The Badgers host the number one ranked team in the nation, Oregon, when they play at Camp Randall Saturday night at 6:30. NBA, the Bucks host the Pistons tonight in Milwaukee. The Bucks with a 99-85 win over the Raptors.
What Giannis did today was he really played. One of the things we harp about is playing quick decision basketball. You know, it went from side to side and moved and went back down, swung back in the paint and made threes. And Giannis was a shepherd of that a lot. Ball didn't stick a lot.
That's head coach Doc Rivers with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. There's not much left for Denzel Washington to achieve when it comes to his career. That is probably why he's mentioned retiring soon. The actor says he will star in the third Black Panther film. After that, he says he will do Othello and then King Lear and then hang it up. There is a lot of potential there to exit the business with a third Oscar for acting. Washington won Best Actor for Training Day and a Best Supporting Actor statue for Glory. Seems like he's really getting the hang of this acting thing. Fasten your seatbelts. There is a new Sexiest Man Alive for 2024, and his name is John Krasinski. The always humble Jim from The Office and star of A Quiet Place says when he got the news, he thought he was being punked. His wife, Emily Blunt, said if he won, she would wallpaper the house with magazine covers. Sounds like they have a busy weekend. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A shower or two around tonight with a mostly cloudy sky and lows in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, a mixture of sunshine and clouds, highs to the upper 40s. We turn to around 50 degrees for Friday and the weekend. Slight rain chance Saturday night. It's 42 right now.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Mike Siegel joins us now to make our popcorn pick of the week. Hey, Mike.
When I was a kid in the 70s, there was no Walmart. There was no right. Sears was everything, from our tools to all our back-to-school clothes, everything else.
Right? Pants, stereos, kitchen appliances. Do you have pantyhose? Yeah, they're right next to power tools on the second floor. It's like you really could get everything there.
Everything.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Dom Salvia Show.
State Senator-elect Jody Habesh-Sinikin. What's the best way, do you think, it is to approach a difference in not just opinion, but in what we perceive as facts with those that may not be aware or don't agree with it?
First, having a conversation. Try to get an understanding of what is really bothering them and try to offer solutions at the state level or at the local level where there can be progress.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Shannon Simon from Cedar Crest Ice Cream, who will help us make our popcorn pick of the week. Then Susan Kaya-Schlusser from the Wisconsin Historical Society joins me, followed by filmmaker Nathan Deming.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air American Indian Relations. And here's our guest host, Christine McDonald.
Welcome back. I'm Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. Our next guest joins us from the city's health department. It is Heidi Ritchie, who is the city's deputy health commissioner, and she'll be speaking about how the City of Minneapolis Health Department is working to bridge healthcare access gaps and reduce barriers in underserved communities, including their new mobile medical unit. Heidi, can you tell us about yourself and what you do as the deputy health commissioner?
Miigwech, Christine, Buju, everybody. Heidi Ritchie, I'm the deputy commissioner of health for the City of Minneapolis. I'm so pleased to be here today. I was born and raised in Minneapolis, and so it really is a passion and commitment that I have to the residents and folks that live and play and work in the City of Minneapolis. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm also a global and public health nurse. I've worked for the city for 19 years. The past few have been in the health department, so I've been here since 2022. Prior to serving as interim commissioner in the health department and then deputy commissioner in the health department, I served as the mayor's policy and budget director. And so I held my portfolio that included public health, climate and sustainability, opioid response, homeless response, violence prevention. So those are some of a few topics that I worked on before coming to the health department. In the health department, I'm the current deputy commissioner of public health initiatives and operations. So some of the less sexy things I do are contracts and permits and administration. And then some of the other issues that I work on that more people know a little bit about is maternal, child, and adolescent health, epidemiology, research and evaluation. So lots of work around the pandemic and COVID. Emergency preparedness, our school-based clinic programs, and then, of course, our opioid response.
So how is the city working to help people struggling with addictions and their families?
Thank you, Christine. That's a really good question. I think one of the things I have to say first is that most of us have either an immediate family member or someone close to us that we know that struggles with substance use and addiction. Lots of times those challenges are met with systemic barriers. And so one of the things we're really trying to do is look at some of those barriers, those challenges, and then also some of the gaps we see in service and fill in those spaces. There's a lot of people working on these issues, the county, the state, the city, lots of nonprofits. And so we want to make sure that we're coordinating our efforts so that we can work with folks to maximize the amount of investment and the resources, because this problem is way too big for any one entity to handle. We have to all work together.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us what type of services the mobile medical unit is going to offer?
That's kind of the main event for me being here today. Just a week ago or so, we had a press conference where we unveiled our new mobile medical unit. This thing is gigantic. It has a dental chair. It's got an ADA lift. There is private rooms so that we can do assessments where people can feel comfortable to share the things that providers need to know in order to effectively and efficiently provide care for folks. Really what we were trying to do is, again, as I mentioned, fill gaps and meet the needs of underserved communities. And so I have to give props to our opioid response team led by Suzanne Murphy, who's the project manager for that team. They've been working on this project for the better part of a year. And so I know they're very excited to get this on the ground. We've got a lot of work to do to do some planning around it, some hiring of staff, but we will have things like increased access to treatment. We're trying to promote long-term recovery, and we want to expand the access and delivery of medications for opioid use disorder. Some of the other services we'll have in the mobile medical unit include basic health screenings, so blood pressure, blood glucose, cholesterol, any type of medication consultation or medication review. wound care, vaccinations, mental health counseling and referrals, youth health services, including physical exams, dental exams, and welfare checks, wellness checks. Then we'll also, as I mentioned, have medications for opioid use disorder. And we want to make sure that if we don't have what can be provided to folks, we can have a handoff, hopefully a warm handoff for any type of referral services to housing, jobs, education, things like that.
Are those services at a cost to those who are receiving them, or is it billed, or is it free?
They are no cost services to folks. If there is an insurance, if folks have insurance, we will take that and we will attempt to bill the insurance company so we can get some patient revenue. Any type of patient revenue we have will go back into the program. We will explore that as an option, but these are no cost services to the people of Minneapolis.
Is there anything more you can tell about the medicated assisted treatment that will be offered?
We're still working on what that will look like. As you can imagine, with things like Suboxone or methadone or the variations of Suboxone, which you might have heard, buprenorphine is the generic term. There's also Sublocade and Brixadi, which are injections that are kind of newer out there. And so we're looking at what our options are and what might meet the needs of the folks that we're going to be serving. But we definitely want to provide that access for folks because we see that that's really the gold standard for moving people from addiction into treatment, into recovery, and then into long-term recovery that would last 90 days or more.
And that is amazing. When is the mobile medical unit scheduled to start operating?
We hope to have things up and running sometime in 2025, early 2025. We're guessing probably early quarter two. At the moment, we're hiring staff. And so we're hopeful to get those staff on board. So those are medical personnel that we're hiring. And because this is a very brand new program to us, we want to onboard some of our medical personnel and make sure that they're involved in setting up this programming and the operations of the unit.
When it starts operating, is it going to be moving around the city, or will it be, where is it going to be located? Is it going to be in specific areas?
Yeah, well, the MMU can be used by anyone in the community, but it will be deployed at specific locations. And what we're looking at is locations where care might be particularly challenging or needed the most. And we want to make sure that our services are culturally responsive and trauma-informed. And so we want to make sure that the value placed on those pieces is value that's going to be needed in the locations where we are. Really, what we want to do is make sure that we're providing access to these services where there is currently a lack of access. So, things like after hours. So, we know clinics run on, business hours and not on weekends oftentimes. So we want to make sure that we're providing some access there. We're in conversations with a lot of our internal partners, like our fire department and our Office of Community Safety, about how we might be able to support them in their work. Working with our school-based clinics, because unfortunately, we're seeing younger and younger the need for medications for opioid use disorder in our high schools. And so looking at how we can support that need in our school-based clinics. And then, of course, looking at, some of our hardest to solve issues. Of course, this is not something that's going to solve an issue, but it's another tool in our toolbox. And so if we can take this unit out to an encampment, for example, and try and, get people seen, get people induced with medications for opioid use disorder, do a warm handoff into housing or into treatment. I mean, that's really what this unit, the purpose of this unit is.
So I guess I got another question. So how is this being funded?
This is being funded with our opioid settlement dollars. So the city of Minneapolis received right around $18 million. And the disbursement is over 18 years. So we have to kind of plan out how we're using the money. And so the first sort of big batch of money we got, we received in the end of 2023, and we are, in the end of 2022. And so we're working through the funding allocations that we received at that time. And the mobile medical unit was basically the one thing that we knew we needed to get out there. And so it's being funded right around near $1 million. And that includes both the staff, the unit, and then some other pieces that go with it, equipment and the like.
Are there additional services or programs that the city has to address the substance use and the opioid crisis?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big one that we're, a big new one that we're undertaking right now, but we've been doing this work since the mayor convened his multi-jurisdictional task force back in 2018. They came out with recommendations in 2019, and we've been working on those recommendations. So some of those had to do with the syringe litter that we see throughout the city. So the city of Minneapolis has a syringe litter program. It includes going to pick up needles, doing sweeps of alleys or public right-of-way. We have syringe boxes that are placed strategically throughout the city. And so we're really the only entity that has any type of syringe program. If, you know, the county uses us as their cleanup. And so it's that's one of our pieces. Also, we partnered with the fire department to install one of our first ever Narcan vending machines. That's at Fire Station 21 in South Minneapolis. It's dispensed over 1,000 boxes of nasal naloxone in the 4 months that it's been operational. We've had to refill it on a weekly basis. And we're currently in conversations with the county and the University of Minnesota to see how we might be able to partner with them and bring some additional Narcan vending to communities where we know the need is great.
Hey, why don't we take a quick break here? This is Minneapolis Air, Minneapolis Indian Relations here on Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP, along with a copy of your ID. They'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. That's 612-373-3333.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org.
Let's live and let howl.
Howl!
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis Air. Air stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis Air dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis Air on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Programming on Native Roots Radio is supported in part by MinSure. Looking for health insurance, but not sure where to start? MinSure has you covered. You can find discounts, compare private health plans, and see if you qualify for free or low-cost insurance. Plus, get help from an expert so you save on the coverage you need. Enroll online by December 18th for coverage starting January 1st. Get started today at MinSure.org. That's MNSure.org.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the City of Minneapolis with Minneapolis Air, American Indian Relations, and here's our guest host, Christine McDonald. Oh, I think you're muted, Christine.
I don't know. I can't unmute you for some reason.
There we go. So welcome back. I am Christine McDonald. I'm the American Indian Community Specialist with the City of Minneapolis. And we're joined tonight by Heidi Ritchie, who is the Deputy Commissioner of the Health Department. Thank you, Heidi, for being with us this evening. When we left, we were talking about the mobile medical unit that is being implemented in the early part or later part of 2025. You mentioned that there are, you're currently hiring to fill those positions. If people are interested in learning about those positions or finding the openings, where would they look to find those?
Well, unfortunately, that posting has closed. So we are hopefully making offers to folks. But if we do need to repost, we will definitely let you know.
What will be on that?
Pardon?
How many staff will it take to run that mobile medical unit?
So right now we are training two of our public health specialists that work for the opioid response team. This vehicle was very big, so it requires a commercial driver's license. And so we're training a couple of our staff on that. And for medical personnel, we're hiring 2.5 staff. But we're also hiring a couple other nurses for our maternal child health program. And that is mostly for vaccine clinics and home visiting. But we're going to cross train all of those nurses so that they can both work for maternal child health and for the mobile medical unit so that we have some backup in case someone is sick or there's a vacation or things like that. So we're gonna have 2.5 folks dedicated to the rig out of a pool of 4 nurses.
Wow, that's amazing. So is there anything else that you wanna share with us tonight?
Yeah, there's a couple more things that I wanna share about some of our opioid response work. We, you know, there's a lot of facets to this work. I mentioned some of them. There's intervention, there's the treatment, there's the recovery, but there's also prevention pieces. And I think, you know, if we can really have some robust preventative measures in place, we can tamp down a little bit on some of the back end work that we have to do to get people out of addiction. Fentanyl is like nothing we've ever seen before. It hijacks the brain, and it is incredibly difficult to overcome. It's powerful. And it's something that if we can prevent folks from using fentanyl in the first place, it's a much better way for us to address this problem than just going at it from the back end. So we're really trying a holistic way of addressing this issue. We're looking at a prevention and awareness campaign, working on that with Russell Herder, which is we've worked with them before on our Climate Legacy initiative. And so really trying to, you know, get some of the prevention out there, also working with our school-based clinics on prevention, and then working not just on prevention with our adolescents, but also provider prevention. And so helping providers understand what this drug does and how they can help when they see patients that have been, like I said, basically hijacked by fentanyl. So the prevention piece, I think, is one that I really wanted to mention. I think it's important for us to make sure we're taking this, you know, multi-pronged approach to addressing this crisis. And then I think the other pieces is that we are contracting with community partners. And I think that's really important because some of the community partners are way closer to the community in this work than we are. Actually, most of them are. And so partnering and providing funding to community groups that already do this work or are looking into enter into this work that serve a particular population and a population where we see disparities. And Christine, you and I were at a meeting earlier today where we're looking at some of the preliminary numbers coming out from 2023 around overdose deaths. The state came out with their data, which is showing a decrease in overdose deaths. And I think it's important for folks to know that that's not what we're seeing in Minneapolis. So the state might be seeing that decrease, but in Minneapolis, we've actually seen an increase. And we've seen an increase in not just the number of overdose deaths, but in some of the disparities that we're seeing, in particular in the Native community, where the rate between Native and whites for overdose deaths is right around, I would say, 27 to 1. In the Black community, it's about 6 to 1. And in the Black community, we're seeing an even greater rate increase. And then in the Hispanic community, we're seeing a greater rate increase as well. And so we have a lot of work to do in our cultural communities, in particular the Native community, because that rate of 27 to 1 is absolutely unacceptable. And I can understand why there is feelings of frustration in the community over that. And I want to acknowledge that, and I want to make sure that folks know that we're aware of it, and we are making sure that our investments will mirror what we're seeing in the data.
And thank you for bringing that up and acknowledging that. That was, we have opioid and unsheltered meeting every 2 weeks. That's a subcommittee of the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors Group. And today, the Hennepin County opioid team presented data specifically around our community. And just like Heidi mentioned, it's, I think for every 100,000 people, there's like 16 white people, there's 16 deaths. And for every 100,000 Native people, it's like 300 and something. The number within that, though, that is just terrifying to me is that there's a large number of our women that are represented in that number. And for me, I can't say this to enough people. Our life givers are dying. Our life givers are dying in this opioid epidemic. And so I just, Heidi, thank you for acknowledging that. And thank you for coming to the meeting today.
Of course.
So on that note, was there anything in addition to opioid work that the health department is doing for the community?
Yeah, so a couple things that I'd love to mention is we have our vaccine clinics that we have scheduled throughout the year, and then in 2025 we'll come up with a new schedule, so that is on our website. But we hold free vaccination clinics, so that's COVID, that's flu, childhood immunizations. We're seeing a real need for the childhood immunizations for a couple reasons. One, because during the pandemic, kids were staying home, not going to school, and those immunizations weren't getting up to date. And then we have a lot of newcomers coming from our southern border. And so we need to make sure folks are vaccinated, but then also we need to make sure that their records are updated so that if there is an outbreak, they don't have to be out of school or quarantine because we have their record of vaccinations. So those are a couple of things we're working on around that. Our lead testing and prevention, we're going to be looking at investing about $3.5 million next year on our lead program. This is significant in particular in South Minneapolis because there are quite a few homes that still have lead-based paint in them. And rather than waiting for children to show up at the doctor with elevated lead levels, we want to get into those houses and mitigate those lead hazards proactively. We also have our radon testing. So we offer testing and mitigation services for qualified residents. And then we have our Homegrown Minneapolis program, which offers community garden opportunities to farmers markets throughout the city. And then that's also our food security wing. So working on something that was highlighted during the pandemic, more than we really initially thought about, was the food security and how much food insecurity there really is out in the community. And so those are a few other things that we're doing in the health department. Really focused on, you know, making sure that we're providing good preventative public health strategies to folks, and then where we have to intervene and try and work on those sort of secondary and tertiary prevention, we're getting in there as well. And so thank you so much for having me on the show. And
you're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look at the Trump appointments coming fast and furious out of Washington, D.C., and what's happening closer to home here in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.